The last time we met was in May, so this is what I call a full-blown agenda with a full-blown committee here. And so I'm really pleased that some of the folks that were not able to attend last week or last month's meeting are here today. So again, even though it's maybe a little bit redundant, let's just go around real briefly and introduce ourselves, because again, we have a couple new people here this evening, and then we'll get started. So Linda, why don't we start with you?
Sure. I'm Linda Pauli. I'm with the City Planning Division. And I'd like to introduce Monica Witzig. She's our summer intern. She just started yesterday. And she's going to help me with managing this project and help support the committee's work.
Ted Corbin. I'm chair of the Historic Commission, representing the Historic Commission, Washburn Historic Commission. Keep talking.
Yeah. John Tuttle. I'm a resident of the Washburn neighborhood.
Kathy Baker, area business owner. I have a real estate, like commercial real estate license.
Karen Hagman, I'm general public resident.
Bob Kiefer, superintendent of Willamette Lane Park Recreation District.
John Thomas, general public.
Ken Eilers, I was a former business owner in the downtown area. Or I am a former. I was an owner.
And you live in the Washburn District?
And I live in the Washburn District, but I'm not here to represent that.
Okay.
I'm Robin Sattler. I'm with the CDAC, which is a Community Development Advisory Committee of Springfield.
I'm Annie Hommel. I'm a plan area resident.
I'm James Yarnell, and I'm of the general public.
I'm John Tamulonis, city staff.
I'm Shannon Mudge of the general public.
Dan Egan, chamber director and resident of Washburn District.
I'm Don Arambula from Crandall Arambula.
Jason Graff with Crandall Arambula.
And George Crandall, same firm.
Thanks for joining us again, guys. So kind of a process check with Linda. We have some people here that would like to have some testimony prior to getting started with the Crandall. Okay. So why don't we do this? If you can stand up and introduce yourself, if you have some comments that you'd like to share with us, then it's time to do it. So anyway.
Tom Dragoo, a working for Useful Bank, president of the Springfield Renaissance Development Corporation. Don't have any comments, John. I'm just here to put my finger on the pulse of what's going on.
Anybody else have any general comments?
Sir. Bill Ruff. I'm a landowner and an architect of work.
For later. Okay. Anybody else? Okay, gentlemen. It's all yours.
Linda, we have a presentation, and we'll go first, and then Rick Williams will follow, right?
Yes.
All right. So with that, maybe we knock the lights down. The image would be a little sharper. Jason, why don't you give it a shot? We have, I'll make the introduction, and Don will follow, and Jason will follow me. So that's better, I think. So the way we go here, this is the project purpose. It's about revitalization of the downtown core. And that core area is shown with the solid white, and the dotted white is the would be the areas of influence. So all this tells us is where the concentration will be in all our efforts. Will we look beyond this area? Of course. But the bulk of the work will be within those white lines. So meeting tonight, we want to get your thinking, answer your questions. We have a response sheet, which we'll hand out to everyone. We want you to list your three top issues and concerns and anyone else in the audience as well. So get a sheet. Here is the team, and we can say we're Crandall Arambula. We're out of Portland. We're assisted by traffic, transportation, stormwater protection, and signage and wayfinding consultants. And of course, Rick, who will follow us with this presentation, will be doing the parking management strategy. Star-studded team. Process and schedule, then shown here, summarized. Three parts to it, a starting two, a designing, and a three, an implementing. And typically, we don't like to spend too much time starting, churning old information. We like to get right to the designing with you, looking at alternatives, and then moving into the implementation phase. Because no one wants this plan to sit on the shelf, and it won't if we do our jobs right. And so lots of emphasis on implementation. Meeting, here we are, meeting number one. And number two, sometime in August, we will come back. That date has not been determined yet. We will come back with alternatives in response to the objectives that you have set up for this study. And then in meeting number three, where you see that three, that circle, we will come back then with a refined or preferred alternative. And meeting four, we will come back then before the end of the year with the implementation strategy. Rick's work, it will run along right with ours, and so his work components are in the blue and the blue dots. So we're going to be working closely with the Parkey. And you're downtown then, and Don's going to take it away.
Sure.
So what we do is try to look at the largest scale play in the world. I don't know. But in a sense, what we're trying to do is most of this information is in large measure is for our benefit. In a sense, you need a check to make sure that we've got the right information as we go through this background information. So we look at Springfield not only within your city limits, but in the region, and consider Eugene as part of that. We have had the opportunity to take a look at some of your refinement plans. We've got downtown East Cali Butte and Glenwood as part of that, so we have an understanding of some of the land uses associated with that. An idea not only for the parks and recreation areas are within the downtown, but in adjacent neighborhoods. We've reviewed the transportation plan, regional transportation plan, the trans plan, so we get a sense of where you are and what your thoughts are as far as roadways and transit and bikes and everything else as part of that. Urban renewal obviously is a big part of your downtown, and it is also of the Glenwood Urban Renewal District. So we're showing part of the Glenwood. We know it extends further out towards I-5, but that's a great tool, and we understand where the boundaries are. Look at zoning, what you have, what your existing regulations are. That circle dash line is a quarter mile. That's usually it's a 5-minute walking distance, and it really helps us inform us as far as what's walkable and where the center of your community is, and something that we'll be revisiting as we go through the background information. It's also helpful for us to take a look at and have an inventory of what your existing land uses are, because often we find they're not necessarily consistent what is allowable in zoning. Some things may have been there for quite a while. There may be non-conforming uses, for example, and it gets you more of a fine-grained view of what your downtown looks like. Another key piece for us, and probably from the analysis standpoint, one of the most important parts of this is to do this sort of almost a figure ground drawing, in the sense that we look at where you see the dark gray areas. We call those soft sites, for lack of a better term. And those are areas that are typically underutilized as far as a low-value building, a vacant parcel, and in some instances even parking lots. So we're looking for those areas that we think have a high potential for redevelopment, and you can see there are development patterns, whether it's along the mill race or along Island Park, for example. So there are definitely a development pattern here when we start looking at soft sites.
Lots of opportunities.
Yeah. We respect and understand you've done a lot of work over the years, dating back as far back as February 84. You did a downtown tomorrow plan. And we look at as recent some of the things that you've done as far as some charrettes and some other station area plans in the last 5 years. And what we've done is then looked at these and done an assessment as far as the significance to downtown revitalization. That's not to say that these plans are insignificant, but when we look through the lens of what's important for revitalizing your downtown plan, there are two essential ones, and those are the two that we've indicated with the green dot, using a consumer's report, green being good, medium fair, or yellow, and low is red. The urban renewal plan and the downtown revitalization strategy of 2007 are those two key pieces that we really want to build off of. We'll look at these other things, but certainly those are the two key pieces that we need to be aware of. One of those things has to deal with is that one of the studies we had was a economic study that was done in 2003 by a local firm, Echo Northwest. And what they did is measure existing markets. So the bad news is when you look at downtown, if you look at past trends, you're batting 1,000 or zero. You've got a lot of zeros going up there, goose eggs. So, and that's not surprising. We find this not a surprising indicator when you haven't done a downtown plan and you don't have a strategy for developing your downtown for residential, retail, and office. So the natural tendency is to take your regional market and assign it to other areas. Our task, in fact, is to take these numbers and create a market where there is none today. And I think that's what we need to do, is look at those real estate conditions, those livability issues, and figure out a way to attract more of this regional market share into your downtown. The existing was there, and then you look at 2015, not much improvement, some infill, not even a lot of infill, just some infill for residential, some renovation, so it's very timid and very conservative. While on the other hand, you got areas like Jasper and Natron, where you've got a lot of housing and a lot of commercial and retail development, in fact. So it's information. It gives us a baseline, and so we'll build from there.
We go into areas where we find these statistics. The market guys say there is no market. And what we say is we can create market. We can attract market. And so the task for all of us will be to identify and design a development framework that developers will want to get next to, because they have any number of places in your region to invest, and when we're finished your plan, we want them to say, we want to be in downtown, in the downtown area. So
what I think what you should take from this is that it is tough business to revitalize downtown. And we need to be diligent, and we need to follow some fundamental requirements or characteristics that make great downtowns.
Don, could you go back one?
Sure.
What is the cost under retail, like the $350K, the $80K, $105?
There's no cost in that. Those are projected numbers. That there's
$350,000. K is $1,000.
I know, so that's
shorthanding.
So that is the potential square feet. Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So this is not a cost, but it's a square feet,
yeah,
as part of the numbers. So we apologize for not putting the numbers. We know that a great downtown, whether it's the size of Salem or Portland or even a smaller downtown, such as like Whitefish, Montana, where we work, that has 5,000 residents, they have some consistent characteristics, and they're listed here. And this presentation essentially is going to go through this list. So don't worry about writing it down. We can get you a presentation anyway. So in a large part, we're going to go through this fairly quickly. So a lot of words, but we're not going to talk about every point. So starting with the authentic character, you've got history here. You should build off of that. It's different. It makes you unique. And it's something that you've already done some inventory work on. So here is some of your historic resources. So you see yellow, significant buildings. And so there's a lining Main Street. It's a treasure you need to build upon. So you've got buildings such as that. Unique, irreplaceable, they're gems. And so somehow we need to make sure that those are maintained and made economically viable. Retail hotspots, the next piece of this. Retail, as we say, is the hardest part to get right. And we also say it's not art, but it is science. Retailers follow specific strategies, and what we want to do is make sure that we follow those strategies for attracting retail into the downtown. And so I'm going to go through each of those. So what do people want? So first is understanding the shopper. And so when we look at and develop a retail strategy, we need to be clear-eyed about it. People want convenience. They want to make sure that that parking is easy to get in and out. You know, bargains, price, especially in our down economy, is a concern. And the new thing is what we would describe as a retail experience. Really not a new thing. It's something that has circled 360 degrees, and it's replicating the historic downtown in areas such as lifestyle centers, where you see 7% of people shopping today, where that market did not even exist 10 years ago. So here's the sobering news. It's downtowns today are attracting about 2% of all shopping trips. Well, big boxes, no surprise, is a big piece of this. The interesting thing is you can't create markets. So, for example, the internet 15 years ago didn't exist, and it's already got significantly, almost five times more shopping traffic to it than the downtown. So what we are, our charge is really is to understand how we can improve the downtown and improve this number for you specifically. So what's the good news? The good news is that the malls are in decline. Only one mall has been built in the entire U.S. since 2006. They're expensive. People are not happy with that retailing experience, and they, in fact, want to shop in a downtown setting. So developers around the country are developing these faux main streets. They call them lifestyle centers. So you've got them one beat. You've got the history. You've got the existing fabric. Our job is to repair that. So also understand that there is, what we said, we can attract a market. We need to understand where your competition is. So we're going to ignore Eugene for right now and say within a couple-mile radius of your downtown, we've done an inventory of not all the shopping areas, but some of them. So this number is even a little conservative because we only looked at the Gateway Mall of over 500,000 square feet, Mohawk at 800,000 square feet. So big concentrations of existing retail as opposed to where you have downtown, a little bit more than 130,000. So that's 1.4 million square feet of retail. So the thing you got to keep in mind is that to support a 60,000 square foot retail center, essentially a grocery store plus some retail shops, you need either 8,000 residents within a mile radius, or you need drive-by traffic to take advantage of your larger population. So it's something we're going to talk about. So you can see you got a lot of retail, a lot of and maybe not the potential for the market. So you also know, too, that you have some other retail that's planned in the future, Marcola Meadows and also the Jasper Natron area, which are well over 250,000 square feet. So that's 700,000 square feet added to that over a million square feet means that you got a lot of competition for the downtown, that toughest part to get right. So it's no coincidence that people are not shopping downtown right now if you're not addressing some of the basic retail fundamentals that I'm going to go through here. So when we look at an assess a retail downtown Main Street, there are a series of fundamental requirements that you have to get all right. It's not negotiable to get 50% of these or 30% of these or 80% of these. If we were to do a consumer's report evaluation of these, at the end of our process, every one of these little arrows must come out as green or good, not fair or poor. So our job is to make sure when we do our final plan that we have addressed each of these. So starting with the right retail configuration. There are four components of this, and I'll start with the retail configuration, which is ground floor retail on both sides of the street. So this diagram represents a traditional Main Street. So the red represents ground floor retail storefronts, and historically had a grocery store and a department store. Probably don't have the, it's not likely you're going to get a Macy's or a Nordstrom in your downtown. It's difficult to do, and even in large city. For example, Chicago is spending about $50 million to get a downtown Nordstrom. So I don't know. So we're going to look at it, maybe a different strategy. That's not to say that you can't get a grocery store. So are there good examples of where the smaller size cities are succeeding? Yeah, they are. And they're in places like Hood River, which had a more of a Main Street 15, 20 years ago, and they've turned it around. So they follow some of these retail strategy ideas that we're going to talk about. We know that when you've got one-sided retail, it doesn't compare with two-sided. So as you see, it getting away from two-sided, it becomes more and more anemic. So you want it on both sides of the street, not just on one side of the street. You've got to have it on two sides. Also know that it cannot be discontinuous. Think about a mall. What do they do when a business goes out of business in the mall? They put up fake storefronts. They fill in with advertisements to get that person to walk by the store and visit the next one. You've got a lot of missing teeth there. So the idea is you need to have it compact and contiguous and not spread out everywhere. So it needs to be in this tight configuration. You need anchors. Things to drive people into the downtown for those daily necessities, like a grocery store. And again, you see those on each end of your main street. We do know this, that anchors drive the small retail shops. So, and often these could be like a grocery store, which is ideal, or it could be a cluster of very light, similar uses, home furnishings, for example, that people create a destination of. So, the small retailers profit from having a large anchor. Okay? The length of it is very important, too. It needs to be walkable, and that means that 5 minutes, that quarter mile we talked about at the start of this thing, that's a comfortable distance for anybody to walk. So what we did is overlaid your main street, which is on the top diagram, with a typical mall in the south. And this is similar if we were to show you Mall of America or Gateway Mall. So the retailers and the retail mall developers replicated the historic Main Street. And they said, let's put the anchors where you see the dark blue at the end and fill those with inline shops. It's not a coincidence that that's a quarter mile. They built off the historic Main Street, for example, what you had. So we need to think about where that retail core will be. It may not be exactly where we're showing it, beginning at 7th and going over Park, Pioneer Parkway in the end, but we know it can't be more than a quarter mile for it to be effective. So that's something we need to keep in mind. Critical mass is also important. It needs to be significant, so it's a regional or neighborhood draw. 150,000 square feet. So think of it this way. A grocery store is 60 to 80,000 square feet and a shopping center. They usually have maybe a Walgreens or a series of other small shops to make that 150,000 square feet. That becomes a significant draw at 150,000 square feet. Less than that, it's specialty or something less, a neighborhood center. It's not a main street anymore at that size, okay? So that's the site. It can get bigger, but it needs to be at least 150,000 square feet. So what we did is did a real quick a preliminary assessment of what you have as far as retail shops. And when we talk about retail, we need to describe what retail is. Retail is the sale of merchandise, restaurants, or entertainment. Okay, it's not a real estate office. It's not a dry cleaner. It's not a hotel. Those are not, those sell services. So we're being very narrow in our definition of what retail is. It's good to have those uses in the downtown, but the sale of merchandise needs to be 150,000 square feet, and you've got 130. The bad news is, as you see, it's spread out all over. You've lost that connectivity and that compactness to it. Okay. The next piece is attractive storefront presentation. What we want to do is to really address and really to encourage window shopping and an interplay of the inside of a building with the outside. We want to replicate conditions like this, where people are either driving by in their car or walking by, are naturally attracted to those storefronts. And there's some criteria that we look for when we do that. That is transparency. So if you were to look at this building, we look at a minimum standard of 70% at a data line or a line, if you were standing, that would be 70% And you also want to make sure that that building's up to the street. So we did the assessment of your downtown, green being good, red being bad. So obviously you don't have a lot of good right now. So we want to show you some of the good. So the building at 4th and Main is pretty good. So if you take a look at that, that transparency, the building's to the street. Front door faces the street. That's the other piece of this. And you've got some things that need some improvement. And this doesn't have transparency. And one of the building comes to the street, it doesn't work, or this. So these are, while they may have the retail use, if it doesn't have that presentation, you've lost the opportunity. So it's important to keep these linked together. And we can regulate that as far as when we get into implementation. We can give you some suggestions how to do that. The pedestrian environment, not only the building edge, but the floor plane of your downtown street is important. This is a project we did in Lake Oswego, the downtown plan there. And here the street is really divided into zones. The through pedestrian zone where you walk, place the storefront zone where you sit and have outdoor cafes, and a furniture zone for planters and other things, and then the cars, providing that separation between the traffic and the storefront. Need to replay that. And it could be as narrow as 12 feet. Okay, that still works all right for it. Pedestrian crossings. When we think about the sidewalk or the intersections, you need to think about your priority. The pedestrian should be the priority as far as the downtown, and you need to have these conditions where children and families feel comfortable walking in your downtown. So while we've got children here, this intersection could even use some improvement. The sidewalk expression should extend through the intersection and have priority over the street. We'd like to see the cars crossing the sidewalk rather than the sidewalk pedestrians crossing the street. Okay? Parking should be shopper friendly. And we're going to be really coordinating with Rick Williams on this. But not all parking is equal. And there is really three pieces to parking that you need to think about. And the highest priority for us to get a successful downtown is attracting the local shopper. Visitor and employment parking can respond and don't have the rigor of a local shopper. If I'm an employee, my main consideration isn't necessarily proximity to my retail shop. It's mostly about cost. I want a place where I have paid less per month. Or as opposed to a visitor, I've got all day, so I might be willing to walk a block or two. But if I'm a local shopper, I've got to keep in mind I'm competing with Walmart, where I may walk a quarter mile in a parking lot in Walmart. I've always got that visibility and that sight line to the front door. So when we think about local shopping, we need to make sure that we're addressing the characteristics that we're competitive with the big boxes. And that means locating it in the right location first and foremost. So, George, you want to go through this part?
Why don't you flip it? I mean, just talking about, you know, we're often asked about wherever we work, people are interested in parking, obviously. And whenever the parking inventory is completed, it turns out there's more parking than anyone can use in the downtown on the streets. But the perception always is there's a shortage. And the problem is that parking's all in the wrong place. It's not where people want to park. And so why don't we go to the next one? So typically you find that if that's a retail main street, the red, and the yellow would be on-street parking, that if you did an inventory within that area, you would find that you have a surplus of parking. You have surplus spaces, but again, it's in the wrong place. So that when we think about doing the inventory and looking at the retail main street, you really don't want to look beyond a block. That's where we all want to park. You and I want to park. If we're talking about 60-foot retail, you need a certain amount of parking, 60-foot deep retail from the street, or 100-foot deep. In other words, you're going to that bottom line, there's a big difference. There's a parking shortage of 250 spaces over here in the far right, about 620. And you can only park about 20 to 30% of the parking you need for retail on the street, curbside parking. The rest, if you're serious about this kind of retail configuration, it has to be somewhere other than on the street. And so where should that be? Let's go to the, so if it, here is that, the deficit parking then would be in that big block in the middle. That would typically be a parking structure to take up the slack. Now, quite often, a community feels that we don't have the money for a parking structure, we don't want to build one. Well, that's a surefire recipe for anemic downtown retail if you really want a healthy retail Main Street. I mean, that's just the way it is. So that's just for your information. And as we work with Rick, we'll be talking about retail parking, specifically what you have and what you need and what the solutions might be so that to supplement your downtown parking if you really want a healthy retail environment.
And you need to make sure, if you can't get it today, that you reserve that site so that, that you have the potential over time to do that. So the most important parking, though, is still always your on-street parking. We know that as a parker, I always drive around the block and look for that parking spot right in front of my building or the retail establishment I go. It's just human nature. You'll circle and then go into a parking lot or a parking structure. So it's not even necessarily, as George said, the 20% is all you can provide. You need to provide what we would describe as teaser parking at a minimum on every block. So it's important that we have parking on the street first and foremost. So what we've done is assess where you have, you've limited your potential for on-street parking. So red indicates where there is no parking. And there may be a number of reasons for that, either a loading zone or turn lanes or other series of rationales for that. Or it's because it's a very busy roadway that you need more capacity. So South A, for example, no parking on that, simply because it's a conduit of moving traffic through your city. So the travel lanes are more are valued more than the on-street parking there. So in some of the areas you have no restrictions up in the neighborhoods.
You don't like to see all that red.
Yeah, so we need to be able to look at the reasons for that and try to reduce that number. Auto access is the other thing, too. Keep in mind, again, that if you're, you don't have the population within your downtown to support, for example, that grocery store, you're going to need to rely on a larger trade area, a mile or two out. And so you're going to need some traffic to go by your Main Street. So what we found that there is a, we would describe a sweet spot, a range of parking where retail will be effective. We know that if you get less than 5,000 average trips past your front door a day, very, very difficult unless you're in a very, very high density neighborhood, Manhattan, Pasadena or Santa Monica. It's very difficult to have success in a retail zone or a college campus, for example. It's very difficult to make that work. So we look for a number, the magic number is about 12,000. Once you get over a 15 to 20,000, while the retailers love that, it becomes a hostile zone for pedestrians. It's just too much traffic, and people do not feel comfortable on that street. So while you could get retailers there, they're more likely to be auto-oriented, simply because it's not a pedestrian environment. So the other piece of this, and it's illustrated in this drawing, it's helpful to that is in two directions, because then you can take advantage of the AM and PM peak traffic. If I'm a restaurateur and I'm on a one-way street and all the traffic is moving the peak hours in the morning and my business is closed, I have no advantage of over that traffic driving by my building. So it's helpful from a retail standpoint to have it two-way. So what we did is then did a quick assessment looking at the traffic numbers from your transportation plan of what you have today. So the yellow numbers indicate the average daily trips for Main Street. And then the white below that are for South A. And on Pioneer Parkway, you see the other numbers. So when we're looking at retail, you're in that number. The difficulty is this is existing traffic, hasn't taken into account any future growth of your community, hasn't taken account of what your level of service is as far as turning your capacity of roadway width, or what the future development might be in your downtown. So so it is a limited number. So we think you're kind of topped out here.
And the other problem is it's one way, your lights are synchronized, it means that the speeds are high and they're hostile and you've got a lot of truck traffic. It's a very hostile environment to be in. Things that would help, of course, if it was two-way and because you get the friction of traffic opposing traffic and then the speeds are slowed down and you didn't have the trucks. All of that would help, but you're really at that maximum number right now and it's only going to get higher over time. So there is a problem.
Okay. So no, probably no news to any of you. Okay, so the next piece of this is what we describe the downtown living room, or the civic heart of your community. And we can look back to documents such as the Law of Indies, which the Spaniards brought over to establish all their colonial cities. They started with the square first, and they follow this criteria. It needs to be at the crossroads. It can't be off the corner somewhere. It needs to be in the center. It needs to be a part of your retail street. Retail businesses that are adjacent to the square sell more per square footage. If I'm a business owner, I can get 10 to 12 to 15% higher lease rates for in my grandpa retail adjacent to a square as opposed to Main Street. So they're not only just a nice thing to have, but there's an economic benefit for them. So we want to see a space that is multi-purpose. It's not a park. It may have some green, but a large measure should have a paved area. Places that are flexible. You don't want to over-design this. You don't want to start designing stages and things that don't give you the flexibility to bring in a semi-truck in the morning and have a farm for a concert that night and the next day have a farmer's market there. It needs to have these sorts of characteristics, a multi-purpose space enclosed and surrounded by active ground floor uses, so you have extended uses for at least 18 hours a day. We did look back at your 2001 station area plan, and you identified location for a plaza. And as we develop alternatives, we'll certainly look at this and evaluate it against the criteria that we've just identified as a meeting, and we'll assess this as one of the alternatives for a plaza. So don't want to forget your past planning efforts and start from scratch if you've already thought about this. So I just wanted to remind you of that. Reconnecting to nature. Something in a sense that we think that you may have turned your back on to a degree. You've got some great assets already, Island Park, and Jason goes through this a little bit in opportunities constraints here, that is in dark green, and then the open space, and also obviously the mill pond and the mill race, which you've got strategies to address over time. So when we look at images like this, this is unique. This is where this community began, its connection to the water, and there are assets that are diamonds in the rough that we need to really feature, especially for housing and other uses that really demand those sorts of spaces. Next is pedestrian and bicycle emphasis. Here's a number that we always, and some people are surprised by this, but I guess maybe some aren't, but here it is. We look at a typical downtown. The dark brown are the private ownerships or the blocks, the private area. And the darker color, the darker brown, is the public right-of-way. And varying on your block size, we're showing 200 by 200. If it's 250 by 250, it changes a little bit. But it's usually around 40%. And a downtown is in public right-of-way. And think of that as your lane and your opportunity to have the most significant impact in the quality of it. Its value is that developers and people who invest in downtown are attracted to attractive public streets. And when we get this sort of condition where we've got great streets, we get great downtowns, that active area. And when we treat our streets as just conduits to move traffic through for trucks and cars and buses, we get this sort of situation. So we need to make sure that 40%, which is your land, is really tended to and as a development tool. One of the issues, not only is the traffic numbers, is also the characteristic of the travel in your downtown. So this diagram indicates street classifications, arterials, and other things like that. The key piece of this is that South A and Main are principal urban arterials. They're highways, but they're a local truck route, but they're not, Jason clarified this, they're not ODOT truck routes, correct?
Yeah, they're not.
And so that is an important distinction to make, because there are certain requirements for a state truck route that a local one doesn't have. So we've recognized that there is an issue of truck traffic near downtown. So it's not simply just the number of cars, but the characteristic and the effect of big vehicles like this have in your downtown. So if you are encouraging trucks of this size in the downtown, you need to design for them. That means wider lanes. When you have intersections, they've got to be bigger, because obviously a vehicle like this needs a lot of room to turn a corner. So that eats into your curb extensions, your crosswalks, and even if you want to do raised intersections. It's also the design of the street. You need to design a thicker section for the roadway, the pavement section, than you would for a roadway that didn't encourage these. So there's lots of financial and also sort of livability issues that come along with this, besides simply the noise and the distraction of a big vehicle like this going through the downtown. Housing choices, the next piece. So we follow fundamental real estate requirements also for housing. And we think that there are a couple of types that you really need to have to create what we would call a mixed income downtown, where you've got a wide range of housing choices for people of all incomes and even physical conditions and ages. So there are characteristics for market rate, high density housing that we want to have. There are characteristics that we'll address for senior housing that we will follow. So we'll follow these requirements, fundamental requirements. And multifamily housing, they all have that. So we think that it's not unreasonable to think that you could get these sorts of housing projects in the downtown. And you've already got some affordable. The Royal Building is a good example of the kind of housing you've got near downtown, and we'd like to see more of this. So we get that mixed income of, our usual target range is no more than 25% affordable and 75% of market rate to get a healthy mix of those two. So that's kind of what we'll be looking at when we start looking at housing. And the key piece of this is really thinking about when you have density, you need the amenity package. The key consideration for people looking and living in high density is the proximity to these parks. And rule of thumb is every 3 or 4 blocks you need to have a park or access to a riverfront or some other amenity similar to that. So when we think about housing, we need to think about open space. Okay. So what do you have today? You don't have a lot of housing, 144 units. You can see it's indicated here with the diagram. So we can build off of that. Going back again to the Echo Northwest market study, they projected 900 units by 2015. That's we feel that's easily accessible, and we should be able to exceed that. There's no reason you shouldn't to think you could get more than that. Employment's the next. Employment is a very important piece, and when we start thinking about employment, we want to think about where an office or an employment needs wants to be located. And think about when you think about an office building. They usually have light prestige. They want to have high visibility and drive-by traffic. They want to have 100 Main Street, 100 Broadway. They want to have that prestige address. So it can't be buried out back and behind to get a significant employment use. So that's one of the things that we're looking for sites. So for example, today you've got a corridor of employment uses on North A. And in large part that they're a little bit more abundant, a little bit tired, and they would describe those as Class A office sites, simply because it's a backwater. And so they function as a support office or a back office location. But if we're interested in providing more opportunities for Class A or high-value office sites that will bring in high-paying jobs, we need to find sites that have high visibility and drive-by. Okay? And you may have some sites here, and I think we're looking at some of these. So there are some jobs, mostly government-related, about 800. And obviously, you're getting a justice center to that will contribute as part of that. So here's some of the government numbers and the Office for Professional Use as far as employment, just for background information. We can do more than that, we think. Transit, obviously, you've got the MX up to Gateways coming up. BRT is great. Eugene Springfield's an example nationwide of how to do a good BRT system. So we need to build off of that and make sure that we address things and think about maybe a little bit out of the box of some of the things that we've got, like park and ride. I know Rick's going to think about that. So there's your system, very high quality station. The rail is the other piece of this, and it's a little bit overlooked, but obviously you've got to deal with the freight traffic, 17 trips, trains a day. And we understand that UP is, Union Pacific is, over time will be adding another track. So this number is not going to stay at 17. If they add another track, it's likely to even go up. So we need to consider the benefits and impacts. Also Amtrak, you've got trains that go through here. We want to make sure that we plan for, whether you've got it in the short term, but for when we plan for this, we get a station in Springfield. And also consider the possibility of the high-speed corridor that would continue from here all the way up to Vancouver, British Columbia. So we need to think about these, because with $4 gas or higher, likely in our future, this gives you regional access other than a drive up to the airport and flying out of here. Okay. Cultural entertainment too, key pieces of this to make your downtown balance. You've got a good start with some of the things such as the Wildish Theater, and want to build off those and strengthen those. And then education, unique piece with your schools here, Academy of Arts and Gateway, and we're aware of those. There's some benefits and also some limitations with those, and we need to be aware of both of those. Opportunities and constraints, and I'm hand up to Jason.
Change the tempo to keep you interested here.
Keep moving, and we're almost there. You all are being very patient. Looking at the opportunities in downtown, obviously you've got a traditional Main Street. You've got some great fabric. You've got a fairly high employment base, stable employment base with government services in downtown, and as Donna identified, several recent investment projects that are really building strength along your Main Street, which the image is here, which is a tremendous fabric to build off of. So it's not like we're working from scrap here. Again, Wildish, wonderful facility. You're semi-establishing a cultural district there on sort of the east side of Main Street. You've done a wonderful job with the transit facility, activating it. People are getting off the bus. There's active uses, coffee shops, parlor, food. It's a very nice development asset in downtown. Of course, your public market is a real draw and creates a destination for downtown. So your strengths are emerging. Of course, affordable housing is a wonderful attribute in downtown. This project, very well done, ground floor commercial, increased density housing in downtown, which is critical to your success. So we're happy to see some of these projects. Access to downtown is pretty much a no-brainer. You've got great east-west access along 126. You've got good AM flow traffic heading toward UGN, PM flow traffic coming back in the evening, and of course north-south access along Pioneer Parkway. Talk a little bit about your parks and open space, Island Park, tremendous asset, Willamette River, and additional work and future work that you're doing on the Mill Pond and the Mill Race. Transit Center, envy of the country and your BRT system. It's very unique, it's successful, and you're moving people through your community, not just within Springfield, but within the region, and so we can build off that tremendously. You also have several large development sites flanking downtown. You've got Glenwood, which you've already developed refinement plans and continue to do additional studies on that area, but that's a tremendous reserve for employment and housing to help serve downtown. The Booth Kelly and also some of the vacant properties up north, they also provide additional areas for employment and housing, and we're glad to see these so close in to downtown. Stable neighborhoods, part of your community. Everyone's extremely proud of the Washburn District, also Kelly Butte and Willamette Heights. So the framework for your city is well established, and we have a lot to build off of. And so we see tremendous opportunity in your downtown. Are there constraints? There's a few. When we look at downtown, we still see a bit of a lack of investment. Some buildings that have potentially contributed negatively to the environment. I'm going to pick on the Justice Center a little bit, but I'm seeing quite a few inactive walls, and North A is sort of becoming a barrier and lopsided in terms of what we talk about in terms of a building being able to see through, having eyes on the street. So some projects have degraded a little bit on your investment environment. These are some of the things we see along Main Street, of course, the Justice Center, and a few development projects that have not been consistent with your traditional Main Street development by setting uses off of the sidewalk, separating the pedestrian from the building with parking lots. So there's some things that we need to work through. Main Street and South A, obviously we've identified some of the issues really with truck traffic. It does become a barrier, not only as an environment that is inhospitable to the pedestrian, but it also reduces those connections south of town into downtown, so Willamette Heights into downtown, and also navigating through the city. Of course, images here of the truck traffic. We've also noticed that signalization might be a problem in terms of we see surges of traffic, a light turns red, there's not much traffic on Main Street, then suddenly, boom, here the cars come, and they're coming pretty quickly. The rail, again, you've got limited connections to the south on 2nd and 5th, and so we need to look at how we can bridge that gap, not only from the neighborhoods into downtown, but also from the downtown to your emerging open space amenities such as the Mill Pond. And we'd like to improve on some of the access problems that we see in getting into Island Park. Some of that is just topography, and some of it's man-made, so there's some barriers that we need to break through to make these spaces more successful and serve the community in a greater fashion. Some people have talked about this, the lack of development and orientation to the river. Basically, there's sort of limited eyes on Island Park, and also typically these areas you see here in pink are tremendous development opportunities. People want to be up against the river, adjacent to an amenity, and so the lack of that investment today means that we've got some room for improvement in the future. And another constraint is the lack of clear defined pedestrian and bike connections. We'd like to make those, we'd like to improve connections, for instance, from your schools to your neighborhoods, from your neighborhoods into downtown. So we want to identify some key routes and make sure that those are designed for the pedestrian and for bikes, and we can get people to downtown. And of course, we want to serve a broad base of the community, kids, families, bikers, walkers. And I'll give it back to George for next steps.
Give it to Don.
Okay.
Here we go.
I'm good. We're going to be a little provocative now, because what we're going to come back in our next meeting in August is a series of design alternatives, and we're going to look at a range of things. But one of the key things that we think that we need to resolve, first and foremost, has to deal with your roadway traffic. The couplets, and particularly the one-way westbound on Main and the one-way eastbound on, I should say, South A, our drawing there, so that we can start dealing with some of these fundamental characteristics that we need to get Main Street turned around. So what we'd like to do tonight is to test a couple of ideas that we're going to come back as part of our alternatives, and talk about ways of trying to tame the speed of this roadway going through your downtown. And so here's this, the first of a series of alternatives we would like to think about, and it would be as such. We would like to take South A today and turn it into what we would describe a parkway. We would add some lanes,
a turn lane, and a lane,
so it would be a little bit wider roadway, and we think that there's some wiggle room in there. There's undeveloped parcels, vacant parcels, maybe some softer parcels, and run all this sort of freeway traffic, the highway traffic, on South A. Then we could turn Main Street into a downtown street that is two-way. So that would be the first option. And at each end of this, obviously, if we do this, we need to come back to a one-way couplet. This would require roundabouts.
We talked to our traffic engineer about these because we just said, hey, let's just throw some of these out. And so any of these would be possible, but he said, you know, if they required a lot of additional work, and of course they do. So we just thought we'd open up the discussion tonight because this is central to recovery in the downtown.
And so we know there's a cost to these, and some of these might be pretty big. But for us, it's not only the cost, but what would the benefits be? What would they leverage? So it's important to know what the cost is, but we also know that for your growth of the downtown, we need an intervention. So here's some ideas for dealing with that. The second option would be a couplet. And so this would be keeping your traffic pattern essentially the same way as it is all the way up to 8th Street westbound. And on south A, we wouldn't change it. What we would do is that at 8th Street, where there's a gas station on that corner, curve it up and then up to north A and take that traffic, run it westbound to Mill, and then come back to the bridges in this location. What we want to do then is by doing this is that we can make Main Street, where it's purple, into two-way. So the issue here is, what's the design of that street? So if it's designed to highway standards, we've got a problem that we need to deal with, which is the building we're sitting in today, because trucks need certain height clearances. We've got about 11 feet here, and typical height clearances is at least 14 feet. So the issue is, how do we deal with that, either as a redevelopment site, or is there a way of dealing with this through standards that give us, or signage that says trucks are not allowed to go through here? So it's an issue. The advantage of this is that if we're talking about creating more value on A, North A, because it's pretty moribund street, not a lot of traffic, kind of a backwater, and if we want to see office development that you already have existing here, this will spur that. It would give that exposure and drive-by that you don't have today. At the same time, give us the ability to make Main Street two-way and still maintain its character. Okay? Another option would be to deal with what we would describe as a contraflow lane. So essentially, you would have two or three lanes in one direction and one lane in the opposite direction. So this might be a response to how you deal for these height restrictions. So for example, if you want to say trucks can go through your downtown and you've got a height problem of getting through here, you say sign this as the truck route on the contraflow lane and run it along through here into a roundabout in that location. So there's a whole series of ways we can deal with this. But what we wanted to do was introduce a series of ideas as a starting point to get your reaction of dealing with what we think is probably the most essential issue for us to start with, which is dealing with the traffic and the traffic flow on Main Street first. And so that's all of the presentation. And we're open for discussion. You've got a response sheet, which Jason is going to hand out. And what we want you to do before you leave, we're going to have a discussion now, but before you leave, we want you to list your top three concerns. If you got five, go ahead and put them on the back. If you got 20, get another sheet. So it's, we don't want to limit you, but we do want you to give us three. Okay, top three. So David Letterman, give me your top three, okay?
So any questions? Yes?
Well, it was more of a statement, I was thinking. Public relations issue, I think the roundabouts would be something that would be very controversial because right now we're having issues with people of ages and speed being able to cross crosswalks in a bigger roundabout. So I don't think that's an opportunity that we can go for, especially since we had a couple people hit on Main Street with high speed. If they can't cross, if people can't cross it at a certain age,
Tell me about the safety of the roundabouts. Is it a pedestrian issue?
It's very much a pedestrian issue.
Yeah.
With the parkway area, we've had issues where people feel like they want to cross the street. It can't happen. They feel because of the speed level. I myself can do it, but there's people of either handicapped, just simply physically impaired and stuff.
Okay, you see, the interesting thing is we tell our traffic guys that roundabouts are not pedestrian friendly, and they go, oh, we don't understand that, right. And we explain it to them, and they still don't understand it. So I'm really interested in what your reaction. Yeah. That's fascinating. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, on the roundabouts, when we Springfield first started studying it, and I watched some of the films on the and read some of the documents on the roundabouts, the pedestrian crossing was supposed to be a block away from the actual roundabout, and ours is sitting on top of the roundabout, and it kind of, you know, takes away the roundabout
right.
whole purpose.
Right.
So I think it was more of a, in my opinion, it's more of a design flaw if those crossings would have been further back, and forcing the people to go back a little bit further, I don't think we would be having the problems that we're having.
We would agree with that.
And we don't think yes. it's necessarily a fatal flaw for these. We may be able to design it if it doesn't work with a roundabout to design them without a roundabout.
Yeah. Yes.
Saying that though, George, the roundabout has been really effective, far more though, or more so than people anticipated, on Harlow and Pioneer Parkway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that would have just been a mess had there been stoplights there.
Yes.
But it does. It works pretty well. But the pedestrian issues are, you know, the issues at this point.
Right. And we said we think there are ways around that because if you can get the pedestrians back from the intersection and the crossing, then it is much safer in the narrowing area. So I'm not too sure what they did there, but it sounds like they've got it up too close.
Too close. Right.
And
yes.
so that is probably the problem. Okay. Other questions, comments about where we are? Yes.
When you showed the couplet moving up to A, off of Main North, I'd be concerned that that would be cutting off the Washburn walking residents from getting to the Main Street area.
Mm-hmm.
You'd all of a sudden be moving that high-speed barrier
closer.
Well, actually, in between the shopping and the rather than through the shopping, it's now in between the shopping and the Washburn district. So, I think that's something to think about. Same way that Pioneer Parkway sort of bifurcates people from the Washburn getting to Island Park. Having that couplet up there would keep people from Washburn coming downtown.
Okay, thank you.
So could you maybe further explain that real quickly? Let's say you're going across you're going east across the river from Glenwood into Springfield. So the eastbound traffic would be diverted
to
the purple?
No. It would, if you're just making a through traffic movement through town, you would just stay on South A as it is today.
Okay.
And so the issue is on if you want to access Main Street, you could still do it on 2nd, Pioneer Parkway, anywhere you wanted to do that.
Okay. So this isn't worked out. They're just highly conceptual, which is what other possibilities are there?
Yeah.
What is the purple then?
The purple it would be a two-way Main Street. So you have a one-way Main Street today. By doing that, we would be able to do a two-way.
It would be not only two-way, it would have lower traffic volumes and certainly no truck traffic. Could be then designed to be very, very pedestrian friendly. You would then eventually be able to have raised intersections so the sidewalks would go through the intersections. And the whole thing would be that the pedestrian in that zone would be the priority where today it is the vehicle.
You would have tighter intersections instead of these round swooping intersections that to accommodate trucks.
So westbound traffic would be diverted about 8th Street and then go up 8th Street and then back?
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is a first shot. It might be somewhere else, but we think that there was a gas station there. It seemed like a seam there and we could stay away from Washburn.
Okay.
We didn't want to go too far east on A because we felt it was impacting the neighborhood.
Annie, you had a question?
I get why that's very friendly. People are driving to downtown, but like you said, I don't know. I can't quite understand how it's pedestrian friendly if the neighborhoods, if people have to cross that intense traffic either way. It's like it's kind of surrounded to get into that pedestrian friendly center from the residents that live nearby.
I think it's you identify a challenge that would need to be overcome.
Yeah.
Both of those discussions are based on the assumption that only on the north side is where the potential shopping is going to be on Main Street. We want to also encourage the south part of Main Street also. So no matter what, they're going to have to cross traffic at some point. So I can see their point, but I don't see it as a major issue, especially since you have the dead zone of post office to the city under the city hall.
All good points, yeah.
Let me ask one question out of complete ignorance, but a lot of times I see cities that have business loop, where the highway zips, you know, two blocks just off of downtown, and a lot of times you just never see the downtown, you just always go on business. So I'm wondering what sort of hit those trip numbers that you showed that were in the 13,000 range would take. If you do either of these scenarios, it seems to me they drop 30% or something like that. And what strategies are used to get people off of the business loop to slow down? I mean, I guess if there's a destination there, that's what entices them to come off of the parkway.
Yeah, a couple of things would happen. First of all, you're right, you'd have lower traffic volumes because they are going around. On the other hand, you would be creating a very desirable destination which would attract trips that aren't, you're never seeing now.
Okay.
Now, what those would be, we don't know. We don't know what the numbers are. These are highly conceptual, but that would be certainly a big offset.
Okay. So the issue, too, is the design of this intersection. You probably answered my point, but you still will have a pretty straight shot in here if I'm coming this way. And you will have a ability also if you design this to be able to get this way, too. We want to say if you're a regional trip, use the side roads. But if you're going into the downtown, go on the edges. But we wanted to, through design, I think that you could keep the traffic volume at a reasonable level, 8, 10, 20,000 is not going to get there, but 8 to 10,000 you probably will.
So a couple of things. I know that this is, for me, I mean, the biggest thing, and without a solution, there's not, I think the next priority is just never going to happen. And in fact, our mayor in 1947, when the couple put in, said, well, that's the end of downtown, and it just took half a century to find out that he was right. But he's still alive, so. The thing is that I would encourage a little bit more thinking out of the box, frankly, because really what you're 10, 20 years from now, and just take some modest traffic increases, you're still basically supporting a couplet. That I think, you know, it'll still be trucks, and some of the other kinds of solutions have taken trucks out of this whole area that we're studying and put them somewhere else. If you're going to spend this kind of money, I think this is a good start, as you say. You're just saying, here's some work to get it downtown, get control of the traffic in the study area, but there may be some, if you really looked at it and just thought, what would be another crazy solution? Because I think the other thing to remember is that there's likely to be some improvements on Franklin on the other side of the river that may make an impact about how people, why are there going to be 30, 40, 50,000 trips a day to go through this area? I think eventually people will say, just it's a crazy thing. We have to have those connections, but you know, routing on 14th, taking 28th, and moving trucks out of the 105, because not very far out of the picture here, you do have a freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but this to me looks like still a freeway.
Okay, good. All right. Other questions, comments?
Yeah. A little discussion on the parking. I was reading that in Portland, if I remember right, and had interacted with churches and schools when they had parking at times that was empty during times when shopping was a priority, like on weekends. We have the Gateway School and also the art school that are often empty during times when shopping has potential.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's their own land, but I was thinking we could have this opportunity to discuss with them the idea of, is there something we can come up with to add this parking that's so close to downtown?
Rick's going to do that.
Okay.
He's as part of the study. Yeah.
We'll defer his discussion about how to deal with Sharon and other things.
Now, when Springfield started 100 and some years ago, it kind of had a lot of time to evolve, and it just sort of grew up haphazardly and wound up like this. We have a golden opportunity now to be rather bold and think in terms of future. What are the needs going to be? Like he mentioned that 20, 50, 80 years down the road. And to me, regardless of what we do here, we're only starting the ball rolling, because when this begins to take off, then indeed that retail zone very likely is going to grow. There's only so far it can go to the south. It has to move more to the north. So changes will occur with time as the pressure for development increases. Now, I like this discussion on how to reroute this traffic. I'm not sure that this particular one here is, it's got some great features to it, but where you have the two-way on South A, that pretty well intrigues me. So that you've got it going both ways. It doesn't really resolve the, it sort of resolves the truck issue, because on the green line then the trucks would, in the heavier traffic, would go through. I suspect if you were to conduct a study down there and you were to put markings on people's tires every hour, you'd find a lot of cars there, there are 80 hours a day. And that's a big problem. And so parking structures that make long-term parking available are part of that solution in that regard, because if you're going to have those kind of volumes going through there, people have to have a turnover of parking spaces, and that needs to be researched pretty thoroughly.
Rick's going to do that.
George, real quickly, in your initial presentation, I think maybe Don, you were doing this, talking about the importance of the retail opening to both ways. So this way, this case would be north and south. So Shannon identified that the southern part of the properties are not going to be very viable unless we have traffic starting to go the other way. Would this South A address the issues as far as the backside of those commercial properties that would front the Main Street?
It's problematic with the amount of sites we have here. So you'd have a different, you wouldn't have a necessarily in a Main Street condition here, because also your traffic volume is going to go up. So you're probably not the 13 to 15 you have today. You're going to be 20,000, maybe more. So all of a sudden, it is, that's why we call it a parkway, not a Main Street. It could be a great address for an office development that is not going to be a pedestrian street with that volume.
But if we, again, going back to what I think Dan Egan said, if we used 105 for truck traffic, which is very logical, because there's very few trucks that deliver between, so 52nd Street and the bridge.
So essentially, this is that option. So we don't make it as big and just take a lane in each direction. So what we did on this is what we started with this is, okay, here's a pretty straightforward option. Let's just push all the traffic to the south. That means you need to add traffic lanes, high cost. So what we said is, well, maybe we can never afford that, because we not only need to design for 2050, but we need to have a scheme that you can implement in 2015, not 2050. So we said, is there a way for us to do it a little cheaper using your existing lanes and run it with maybe some intersection improvements in certain areas at A Street and up here, and do maybe a lower cost option? And is there some benefits there? So this was largely driven by cost and ability to do it.
We weren't even going to show these to you tonight when we got down here, because we haven't had a chance to develop them, but we said it is so central to the discussion that we'll be having the next time. Let's just flash these, get them on the table, and get people's reaction to them. Get everyone thinking about it, because we're going to come back with a lot more information on these options or other options.
Just one little thing to add. If they're going to, are those... The determination of whether they belong to the city of Springfield, their city streets, or whether they're still state highway designated is really critical too, because that, in all those schemes, all those curb cuts would close up and you would truly have a parkway. You could go as fast as you like the Autobahn on South Day. So I think in any of these schemes, the city needs to step forward, and that's an expense too.
Sure.
To buy them.
Well, I was looking, I think I've talked to some people about some interim measures that might allow you to get a little extra capacity with this setup, but on the south. Most of that green street right now is three lanes, not all of it, but most of it. And if you assume that your traffic heading west in the morning needs two lanes of traffic, you could cone it so there's only one lane going east in the morning, and then recone it in the afternoon. It's done in a number of cities around the world right now. It's done in Honolulu, outside of Honolulu. And so you wouldn't have to build quite as much, and it's just a matter of moving cones from one side of the street, one lane, you know, the south lane mm-hmm. to the middle lane, north side of the middle lane. And you could at least run that for a while until you get enough money or enough pressure to build a real four lanes out in that area. Maybe that's when you assume it becomes a little more of a parkway with other attributes that you might want to develop. So it's sort of an interim solution, or sort of a long-term one. Okay, good.
Okay, let's just have a process check here real quickly. We've got Rick Williams, who needs about 20 minutes. And we said we wanted to be out here at 7:30, so I guess, George, how much more do you want to cover today before we segue?
We're good.
So we have time for some more questions, or do we want to have a logical conclusion to this part?
Well, I've got one comment I want to toss in here, and I know it's going to be creative firestorm. But several years ago, we built a concrete highway, so to speak, on D Street, so the lane transit could go ahead and use that, and they decided to do things different. So that's going to be ideal for heavy industrialized traffic. Now, expanding on the idea that in the future our retail area will grow, and it really potentially has to grow to the north. This is kind of futuristic, way out stuff, but you might look at seeing whether or not there's any viability to East Street traffic and before it gets to the jail swinging south and tying back in.
Okay, I'm not sure I'm following. Give me that again. Did you want to point it out up here?
It's that White Street.
Okay,
East Street.
East Street.
Yeah, it's B Street. Back.
Just north of the City Hall.
Right.
Right there. Push it up to B.
It's a concrete street.
As soon as you get past the City Hall, you would have to begin to swing because you can't go through there anymore.
Justice Center kind of did in on that one.
Yeah.
Very noisy neighborhood, that.
Yeah, okay. But you're right. Now's the time to think about these things. So that's good suggestion.
And one question back here, too, in the back of the room, and then John.
Hey, this may be a dumb question. I'm fairly new to this, but is there any way to route that heavy truck traffic to the north before it gets into town, or is anybody...
Possibly.
Sure.
Possibly. We'll look at that.
Local deliveries, you know, on A and South A of Maine, mm-hmm. E Street...
Yeah, once you get to 14th, they can just go to Mohawk.
Because mm-hmm. there's a way to get around there. I know that. I still don't know.
Yeah. I'll go down 28th to the Marcolo Street. 42nd. John, you had a question?
Yeah, regarding South A Street. I've always found South A Street to actually be a really nice street, mm-hmm. even though it's completely underdeveloped, and the City Hall is a real problem walking underneath and going through, and now the jail kind of does create a bit of a face, but I've always thought of it as with the potential of being kind of an alley street or a second street to the deep. As Main Street develops, then it kind of pushes to even a quieter street, and I think routing the traffic up through A Street could have it could work either way, but I see it as having an adverse effect on that potential of development.
Okay, thank you. I think we're ready then to move on. Linda, John?
Okay. And we'd love for you all, obviously, to fill out your response sheets if you can't get them to us today. Give them to Linda or mail them in. I know most of you have, and I have collected a few from the last meeting. Kevin, I've got yours from last week. We passed those out. Sorry.
Just, I guess, a closing comment. I mean, just kind of like we didn't even know some of us the questions to ask. So this is pretty impressive in terms of all the different things that you've brought up, and clearly you guys know what we're dealing with and where the potential opportunities are. So I'm very hopeful for the future, and thank you for the preparation that you gave to the stage tonight.
May I ask one other question? You talked about a couple of, I'll call it gaps and problems that you see with the face of buildings, mm-hmm. the parking in some place where there's no parking, for example. in the gaps between activities that are out there. Are there, what's what you call them, kind of contaminants or poisonous areas where you've got street groups or gangs or people that are relatively unattractive to the vast majority of our population, that kind of poisonous area? Like, do you see those as something that has to be cleaned up somehow?
Those are always problems. And we'll be talking to you about that and how to do that.
Our issue is often in cities is have they made, not so much the disinvestment in the city, but have they made investment where that you can't change it? Now, you've got a corporate headquarters that essentially creates a dead zone. I often joke about it and call it a Chernobyl zone, where it's just not, your generation's out before it's going to change simply because it's such a significant investment. We go into towns like Raleigh, North Carolina, with major bank, Wachovia, or somebody like that has done a $150 million building. That's not going to change, guys, when they've got a dead edge there. Now, if you've got a use there that's got some stucco on a window, like the image we showed you, that could easily have blown through.
I'm talking about people on the street that are actually not so nice.
And we'll be talking about that.
Okay. Yes. You're talking about it. You're talking about a mobile environment.
Yeah. Okay. Right. It's an issue. Big one.
We can take you out for beer and show you what we're talking
about. Give me a 40, man.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for
thank you.
Being with us tonight.
Thank you.
So, I'm going to go ahead and segue in and have Rick Williams talk about some of the issues that were brought up by Colonel Ambula.
Mike, taking someone's chair.
No, you need to get right in there.
Well, good evening. My name's Rick Williams. I'm the principal at Rick Williams Consulting. This is my partner and colleague, Owen Ron Kelly. Our job today is just to introduce ourselves. We're just starting with this meeting, and we want to get going. One of the primary things we want to do today, also before we leave, we'll get people from this group who may want to be part of a parking advisory committee that would meet on alternating weeks to really focus on the parking piece and then bring that back to the larger group and as we coordinate with Granville and Rambula. I think out of the gate, I could probably give you a little background on who we are. I've been in the business for about 20 years. My background is actually in Main Street redevelopment and revitalization. In the 80s, I was vice president of the Association for Portland Progress, which is downtown Portland's business association. And we worked in the 80s to revitalize the core of downtown Portland. We established the second business improvement district in America back in 1989. Now business improvement districts are common throughout the country. But ours was only the second one ever created to provide downtown clean and safe services to businesses and retail, marketing services, cleaning services. But in that whole mix, we took over the city's parking facilities in 1987. And at that time, most of the city facilities in downtown Portland were really poorly managed. They were in disrepair, and they were not providing access to customers and visitors. They were actually full of employees. Over the course of the years, when we started with four, I was involved with building three more when they were in my portfolio. And then we rebranded them, remanaged them, created new policies and new programs, and called it Smart Park. Any of you have been to Portland and seen the red and black logos in the 7th Downtown Park, Smart Park retail garage. That was how I got into the parking business. In 1995, I left APP, formed my own company. In 1998, I ran into this guy coming out of Portland State University. And we've been doing parking plans and transportation demand management plans for cities all around the country for the last 15 years. And the little background sheet, I gave you 14 cities that are kind of your size that we've been working with in the past 18 months. We've completed downtown parking management plans for each of these cities, and the good news is each one of them has been adopted and implemented by their city councils. Hood River was an example that Don gave you in one of his slides. That's a program we're very proud of. We designed and implemented the downtown Hood River parking plan. because they've got some really unique issues in and of themselves. So that's a little bit about who we are. What I want to do is really quickly then go through the scope of work for you to give you an idea of the expectations of what you can expect from us, and sort of our approach to parking. I'm always going to talk about the data side of things. But I think when you start, what you'll find in this work scope is that there's the myth of parking and then there's the reality of parking. And neither of them are wrong. But you can't have a discussion about the myths if you don't have information about the reality. So we're a very data-based approach to parking management. We're also very, very desirous of working with stakeholders to give you a grounding in what parking best practices are from an industry point of view, so that you have an idea of how the industry looks at parking. But then from that, we have to tailor the toolbox of what's in the industry standards to exactly what Springfield needs. I can guarantee you we will not give you a canned parking management plan. It will be one designed for you, and it will be correlated exclusively to the work you're doing with Crandall or Ambulance, so that the parking system is going to support your vision. So what we'll, as I told the technical advisory committee earlier, so some of you here, this is redundant. Those of you who volunteer to be on our parking advisory committee, I can guarantee you at the end of the session, you can put a JPC after your name. So as you saw Crandall or Ambulance, it says Crandall or Ambulance PC. But you can put JPC after your name, because you will be a junior parking consultant at the end of this. We want people in the community to be, we need a cadre of people who are experts in parking, who understand, because when the plan is over, there needs to be someone there to help implement it and get it going. And it needs to be grounded in a good understanding. And so we begin with a Parking 101 exercise that we do with stakeholder groups. And the Parking 101 presentation will be tailored to what we've learned from Crandall or Rambula, your employment numbers, your expectations for employment, your growth numbers, so you can get an idea of what, from a Parking 101 point of view, an industry best practices point of view, the situation that you're in. Decisions that you can make now to make your existing parking system work better, and decisions that you can put in place and triggers that you can put in place to make your parking system adapt to the changes that you want to affect over time. And so in the task two list, you can see here a series of exercises that we'll go through. I can guarantee you that the first couple meetings will be challenging, because we don't talk a lot about parking in the first couple of meetings. We talk a lot about who you are, what you want to be, who are your priorities, where are your constraints now, and where are your opportunities now, what's working now and what's not working. From that, we can begin to develop a series of guiding principles against which we compare data. So we know what your principles are for priority and for growth. We can take the data and show you how you're measuring up to those guiding principles. Then we can make decisions and strategies that are grounded, one, in the data, and also, sometimes it's hard to make a decision to make someone park somewhere else. But if you have a guiding principle that says, our highest priority is Parker A, then you can make a decision about why you have to move Parker B. But unless you have those guiding principles, strategies are useless. And people will think you're just pulling them out of your pocket, and that's what other cities do. But everything we'll do will be grounded in that, in data and guiding principles. But I'm going to turn over now for a moment to let Owen talk to you about task three, about data collection.
So one of the things is, in the first initial meetings, we won't be talking about parking a little bit. We're talking about guiding principles and economic goals and for the downtown. We won't even actually have data at the time, and we'll be speaking to you about that anyway, because I'm going to be doing the preparation work for actually collecting the inventory on street. We're going to go block by block face and collect a number of stalls along block face, time stays. We're also going to be inventorying loading zones, handicap stalls, passenger loading zones, things like that. So we'll get a really good idea of what each block face is, how many stalls there are on it, that kind of thing. We're going to do that throughout the entire study area. It's our intention, when it comes time to actually do the survey work, we're going to be surveying every single one of those stalls every hour on the hour for the throughout the course of the survey day. We're also going to be doing an off-street inventory. There's some background materials on that, but we're also going to be going out and verifying those counts. We're going to be looking certainly at the public off-street, but also private as well. We want to know exactly how many stalls are in your downtown right now. with that number, that's going to help us determine demand, what your actual demand is right now in terms of how many people are using the downtown versus your built demand. There's a, you know, how many stalls are in the downtown versus the amount of built commercial space in the downtown. That's your built supply. If you're underutilized, if you're overutilized, what that delta might be. So all the data work helps to contribute to this discussion. And ultimately, when we get to the reviewing the data itself, that's going to help us inform our policy decisions and what strategies we'll use to create efficiencies in the system. And so it's kind of a little mindless to begin with. And like I said, it's a little frustrating in the beginning because we don't talk about the numbers, but it all will make sense at the end. And in the end, you'll all have a better understanding of how our method to our madness, so to speak. Well,
one of the things that you're going to find out, there's three levels of parking to start with. And I don't know if you even know the first level, if any of us do. First, we have to know what the relationship of actual total number of stalls currently built is to actual current built land use. And that will give you a ratio of your current built ratio. It's called a built ratio. And that way we can say for every 100,000 square feet that you've currently built in the downtown, you're providing X number of stalls. We haven't even put any cars in it yet, but it gives you a sort of a track record of what's your history of parking development. Then when we do the actual survey, we will actually populate those stalls with real cars. And we take license plate numbers, as Owen says, every hour. But what we can do then is we'll know when, at what point in the day, you have the most amount of cars parked in your system. We can then compare that to your actual occupied building supply. So not only will we have built buildings, we'll factor out vacant space. So we can tell you today what your current true demand for parking is, because it'll be actual parked cars at the peak hours to actual occupied building area. That allows you to get a sense of how you're currently building parking, the built ratio, and how you're currently using parking. We can use that as a means to forecast the future, because we can take land uses that Crandall and Rambula is programming for you in your plans and say, we have 100,000 square feet of retail planned over here. Now we can say, based on your existing ratios of demand, here's how much at minimum you would need for parking. We can then compare that to ULI data or ITE data or other types of demand predictors that are out there in the industry. But I always like to give a community what your true demand is compared to what some other city says your demand should be. And then we'll have a range. That way we can begin to size your system for the future. And then, as Owen said, also we'll know where parking is being used and where it's not being used. And then, as George said, sometimes you can go into a city and find lots of unused space. Hopefully that's an opportunity. But if it's 900 feet, 1,000 feet away from an activity center, it may not be useful. It may not be for the primary customer. We will maybe want to reprogram that then to the secondary customer. So that's the type of data work we'll do for you.
And it is actually interesting, the perception versus reality. They touched on it a little bit earlier, but the perception of parking, everybody, believes themselves a parking expert. Most people have cars. They drive into the downtown. Everybody's tried to park or look for a parking space, and if they can't find one within the first 2 or 3 minutes of being in downtown, there's a parking problem. Well, we did some work in Bend a little while back, and people wanted us, they actually wanted us to extend our study into the evening hours because, downtown Bend's got a bit of a nightlife. And so they said when we go into downtown, it's a big deal because we can't find any parking. Well, we went in downtown, and yeah, there's no parking right on the main street, but all you gotta do is circle the block.
Let's circle the block.
And there's not just one parking space, there's 15 of them. And so it's perception versus reality, it's education, it's signage, it's all those things that will help contribute to what the true downtown is.
But we'll have a good database for you, I think is our point. Sir, you had a question.
I did. I was wondering if when you do your study, if you have formulas or statistics that will give you some sense of how many of those spots are being taken up by people who are employed downtown.
Thank you. We are going to give you that number. We're going to tell you exactly how many cars park for more than 6 hours. And we can do it by every time stay. How many people park for an hour? How many people park for 2 hours? We will give you unique license plate numbers. So not that we, it's the last four digits, but we can tell you on your given day how many unique vehicles park on street in your downtown, which is a very important number for retailers. And we can compare that to other cities and say, I'll make these numbers up. City X, on a typical retail day, has 5,000 cars parking on street. Springfield has Y. It'll give you a sense of where you are in play. Another point that is good, we're also going to give you a turnover number. We'll be able to tell you how often every stall in your downtown turns over. Within the industry, real quick, parking 101, within the industry, a vital retail downtown, kind of Don had a number that says you need a minimum of 5,000 cars going by your store to be vital. Another way to look at it is you need a minimum of 5 turns a day to have what would be called a downtown that's on the cusp of becoming vital. So if you have a typical 2-hour stall and a 10-hour operating day, you've designed the system to turn over a minimum of 5 times a day. So if you're under 5, then you need to work on increasing turnover. If you're over 5, you're on the way to becoming a vital downtown. Kirkland, Washington, for instance, turns over 8 times a day. Oregon City, 4.6. And so we can see the differences between the cities and begin to give you an idea of that. So your question is a great one. Once we get the data, we'll be able to manipulate it down to the block face, into nodes, by turnover, by unique vehicle, and then areas of occupancy and areas of surplus. So it's going to be, the data will be fascinating. I can guarantee you that.
Is there anything that can skew that data? For instance, in the winter when the university's running, do people park downtown to catch the MX to go over to the university because they don't have parking, or how do you?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why we want to do the date. We want to have the first couple meetings. We need the community to tell us what are anomalous events that could occur. If we're looking at the data and we find a lot of 8-hour parking in a specific area, we can go in and say, who were those people, and factor for it. So that's not as easy to do. Hopefully we try to anticipate that going in. One of the reasons we want to do the survey in September is we know that school will be back in session, employees will not be on vacation, so weather's going to be pretty good, so that we can at least say that our first study is typical. Long term, you want to do this on a regular basis, because people say, well, what one day out of 365 days? We found that it's actually pretty accurate. But it's just your first set. So you want to get a good typical day, that becomes your baseline, and then you move from there. Last thing I was going to tell you, then we'll be done. Crandall and Rambler are going to not only give you a great piece of work, but we're going to look at where future parking can go. Our job then is to take that, and we can cost that for you. Again, our firm, we've built a lot of garages over the years, and been participants in garage projects. So we have real-time numbers on constructability. We have real-time numbers on financing. We have real-time numbers on operations and maintenance. So we can run pro forma for you to give you an idea that if a facility is put here, and we even have numbers, we can run a pro forma on it. It's going to have 10,000 square feet of retail at the ground floor. We can run a pro forma on that and what that retail will generate in terms of revenue to you. But we can then run a pro forma for you, find out what the garage can make standing on its own, and then what the gap between that number is and your financing number. That number again can be given to you to say, now what are we going to do with our urban renewal? Are there other sources of funding that we should be looking for? So we're going to do up to 3 sites for you on that type of gap analysis.
Rick, in one of the early presentations, you talked about how you helped Bend time the construction of one of their parking structures. They were doing it a little early, I think you said, and then you gave some information that said, here's when you should be timing it. Could you describe that a little bit?
We've done that for both Bend and Kirkland. I think Kirkland was the example I probably gave you. They were programming a facility, I hope this is the example, programming a facility to build at a certain time. Because we had true demand, we were able to predict at different levels with 3% growth, 5% growth, or 7% growth in traffic in town, when they would fall, they would trip what we call a constraint trigger. And so what they were able to do is, and they didn't have the money to build the garage yet, but they began to put money into a fund, and we told them that you have 7 years. It was 5% growth?
Not that one for Kirkland. I think it was even shorter time frame. But
yeah, but we gave them a point in time that says if you can collect funds now, you should begin construction in this year. They are now, it was 2009, they're now beginning to build the garage. They've had a better chance of putting together private partnerships, and they've had a better chance that the market is better because the system is more constrained. And they've actually acquired a site to do it. So we can give you a forecast model that says when you would be at the highest level of constraint, which would create a better situation to move forward on a facility. I think what George will say to you, and it's probably inferred, is that you're going to need parking in the future. So getting the funding mechanisms in place is probably always a good thing. Then we can help you time, particularly if it's a freestanding, publicly owned and operated garage. We can give you a good time to build it.
Are your two areas of study the same? Or are you going to be a little bit more concentrated in the core, the very core? It sounds like watching every stall or parking spot for, you know, that's a tremendous army of people. But
We have an army.
Okay. But the overlay, they're exactly the same area of interest or study?
Yeah, give or take. I mean, they've got larger areas of influence that they're looking at in terms you know, feeders into downtown.
So it was Jason's map that had the solid white line.
That's
where we're going.
Okay.
Right. We could probably run some extrapolated models of the influence area. If you assume that downtown is going to be hopefully the highest activity generator, you could say that you could carry that formula then and say, if we want to replicate that in these influence zones, you could begin to use those demand numbers in the same place. You could actually take them outside and plan for them. It would be the best case models.
First the question, Rick, then the segue. When do you anticipate getting back to us? And the second question is that Crandall or Rambula, when would you like to have in this third meeting?
I'll try to answer the first part while George is thinking. We thought it was talking with Linda and talking with the Protective Advisory Committee that probably having the Crandall or Rambula presentations and then a Parking Advisory Committee all on the same day was probably not a good idea. So if you're meeting every month, we would like the Parking Advisory Committee to meet 2 weeks before or 2 weeks after. In the summer, we'd like to get one meeting with Parking Advisory Committee before September, because we know July and August are always tough. But we'd like to get one meeting going, and then from September on, we'd like to meet monthly, staggered against the Crandall or Rambula meetings. I hope that answered your question.
Okay. So, George, Don, Jason, whatever.
About mid-August, we would be ready to go, Linda, if we could find a time. If it's not a good time, if people are going to be traveling and they'll be away, then we'd recommend that you do it very early in September, but we could be ready 6-7 weeks.
Second or third week of
August. But if we need to push into first week of September.
So for us, if we could get a meeting in July.
The first 3 weeks of August. Okay. Not the week of the 24th, that's what it is.
Okay, so what we need to do is look at our calendars in terms of sometime the latter part of July and then try to get get Rick and his group to talk to us sometime in July.
Yes, that'd be great.
So Linda, do you want to look at some potential dates? And
I'll probably have Monica send emails out just trying to hone in on dates, okay? So do we have any volunteers for the Parking Advisory Committee?
Hey, one thing I'm going to ask of you, please don't send them out in machine language.
In what?
You sent all your things out and you couldn't download them because they were in machine language. Same on you. Boxes and squares and triangles.
Yeah.
Oh, is this because of different languages?
It's a new version of Windows, I think.
Yeah, it's a .NET.
For those of us who don't have that, doesn't translate.
How many people could know Windows?
I'm not.
I'm trying to hear what's on the agenda right in the body of the email so that there's never any issue with opening attachments.
Okay, so you're going to go ahead and send it out in user-friendly format. So is there anything more that we need to do tonight?
We need to get volunteers for the committee. So is that sign-up sheet still going on?
We have some hands here as far as volunteers. Wonderful. The parking committee. So Karen, Shannon, Jim. Who else?
Can you just say your name so I can write it down?
Tom Dragoo. Did you get Karen too?
Karen,
did you have your hand up?
No, I was going to ask a question. Thanks.
We got you, Chair.
You're on the committee.
You're the chair.
Karen, Shannon, Tom Dragoo, Steve.
Did you
have Tammy Lonis, and Jim Yarnell. Did I miss anybody?
Group. Well, I think, and then one or two from Public Works, I think, are interested as well.
Yeah, we even thought, we talked to Linda as well, Bill. We're trying to get someone from transit,
right.
Public Works, facilities, and transportation. So.
Okay, so.
Thank you very much for your time.
I guess it's up to you at this juncture, Linda, to communicate in terms of those potential dates. Mm-hmm. And Cranville Rambula, thank you for joining us this evening. Wonderful work. Rick, thank you. Pretty impressive. So I feel a little sense of momentum here. So let's go for it.
I have two more things. You need to approve the minutes.
Let's have a motion to approve the previously.
I move we approve the minutes from last month's meeting.
Second. Okay. Any questions, discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
And also, we're starting an email list of people who are interested in downtown. And if you have others that you'd like to add to that list, please invite them, and you can send the email addresses to me. Yep. And I picked up a few new ones tonight. Thank you.
I do have a question.
Sure.
Email own property in Springfield. I live out of town. Can I be on the advisory committee? You have to live in Springfield.
Did he say he didn't
live
in Springfield?
It's property, but
it's been established.
Pardon me?
The advisory committee has been approved by the Planning Commission and Council. So it's kind of it's formally.
Can we now have a traffic?
A parking?
He's saying
about the parking committee.
That's fine.
I can't work with Mr. Roth.
Okay, you guys have to.
Yeah, that's not an official committee. So.
Also,
Bill, are you interested?
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
I got a stake in all this.
Okay.
I wanted to let you know that the presentation that you see tonight. The response sheets, summaries that come out of these meetings. So I'll be working with Linda to have those on the website as well. So
okay.
You'll have access to that venue as well.
It'd be helpful to have the top three priorities kind of formulated for us.
Yeah.
Anything else? Okay, let's go home.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Where's that at?